all day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com, music for your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to my show, Adila, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul, where we will get up close with our radio guests. Before I introduce you to my very special guest, I'd like to share with you my thought for the day. It is, I've never been afraid to speak my mind, and I don't back away from things just because some people might consider them controversial. Vivian Carter Mason, social worker. And so it is. Our guest today certainly is known to speak her mind and meet controversy head on. She has performed her tribute solo show, The Fannie Lou Hamer Story, over 100 times from coast to coast in colleges, universities, churches, festivals, and more. Her powerful vocal range and training allow her ease whether she's singing opera, jazz, gospel, or spirituals. In addition to her portrayal of historical figures in edutainment, one-woman shows, she is an actor probably best known for her role as Lucy the Slave in the cultural film Sankofa. I welcome today my friend, the very talented Miss Mzuri Moyo. Welcome, Mzuri.
Thank you, Adila.
It is a delight to have you on the show today.
Wow, I stand in good company.
Oh, bless your heart. Yay! Well, just relax. We're going to have fun here for this next hour. And I'd like to start out the way I do always every show by asking my guests to share a little bit about themselves so our listeners have a sense of their personal backgrounds. So to that end, I'd like to do the same with you. And I'd like to ask that we go back to your childhood. Where were you born and raised in Missouri?
I was born and raised in a small little town called Paterson, New Jersey, and it was also known as Silk City. And it's about 20 miles outside of New York, west of New York.
Ah. And it was known as what?
Silk City, because they had silk mills.
Oh, I see. Okay. And how was it for you growing up in Paterson, New Jersey?
Well, my earliest memory is of being in a, like a little compound living with my grandparents in the front apartment, like a front house. It was a house in the back. My mother and my father and my two brothers lived on the first floor. Well, first we lived on the second floor, then we moved to the first floor. Then Miss Risher, who was like an auntie, lived on the second floor with her husband and three girls. And then my aunt and her husband and three children lived on the second floor in the front house. And my grandparents, my mother's mother and father, lived on the first floor.
Wow. So you were
surrounded
by relatives.
Yes.
That's amazing. Most of us don't live that closely to our relatives, so that must have been really something. And as you say, it was like a compound, and that reminds me of when I was in Nigeria, and you've been to Africa too, where you have families who literally do live in compounds where they're just an arm's stretch away from each other. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you were born Lorraine Pope, and when and
Lorraine
how did...
Lorraine Teresa Pope.
Oh, let's get that Teresa in there now, okay?
Yeah.
When and how did you come to choose the name Emzuri Moyo, and what does it mean?
Well, it means good heart in Kiswahili, and I was living in France, and I had a very good friend who was a musician. His name is Sol Camilleri.
Mm.
And Sol said to me one day, "You are not Lorraine, you're Emzuri. You're Emzuri." And when I got back to the United States, because I lived in France a year, and I got back home, and people in France started calling me Emzuri.
Ah.
And when I got home, I didn't feel right. And it was almost like I had to, it's like I didn't have a choice. I just started using it, and it took on. And for 20 years, I just used Emzuri.
That is
and
so beautiful.
I was struggling with it, you know, just having the one name. I couldn't figure out what do I need for. I don't know what it can't be Emzuri Pope. That doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, about a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, a friend of mine, M. Tim Vesey, who is an incredible scholar, and he's fluent in Swahili. He teaches in Swahili. He writes in Swahili. He's a black American. And he said, "Emzuri, your last name is Moyo." We had toyed around with other names. And I said, "Mtimbezi, I like it." And finally I said, "That's it. It's Emzuri Moyo." And so here we are now. Finally, I got my name.
It's a beautiful name. You got that handle.
Thank you so much. I got it.
Uh-huh. So good heart. Is that Emzuri? And then if so, what is Moyo?
Moyo is heart. Emzuri is good.
Ah.
Or beautiful. You can say, remember, Watu Wazuri.
I always think about that when I think of your name. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. What a beautiful attribute. Now.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I was reading that you've quoted your mother, the late Miss Cornelia Pope, who I had the pleasure of meeting, and who you so lovingly referred to her as Kitten whenever you and I talked about your mother, as having said that you began singing when you were 6 months old. That is amazing.
Yes.
Now, tell us about your early recognized voice and how you as a child later were nicknamed at the Solid Rock Baptist Church in Paterson as, quote, Little Mahalia. And for those young listeners who may be saying, well, who is Mahalia? We're talking about the late gospel singer, Miss Mahalia Jackson. So how did your voice come to be recognized early in such a way that you were nicknamed after her? I mean, that is quite an honor to be called Little Mahalia.
You know, my aunt, who just recently passed away, my mother's a sister, who lived in that compound, by the way, used to call me, "Oh, it's Little Mahalia." And so when I don't know, I must have been singing around the house or something, and they made me join the children's choir, and I can remember them pushing me up front singing one time in church, and my grandfather being so proud of me, because he was a deacon in the church, and my grandmother was, they were known as Mr. and Mrs. Perkins, and so church was a very big part of my life.
I can imagine.
And, you know, I can remember being in front of the church singing. And, you know, having that, as they said, that heavy voice, you know, everybody could hear me coming, you know, when I, you know, I opened up my mouth. So, you know, my auntie named me Little Mahalia. That's who you are, Little Mahalia.
Aww.
So I kind of got that name.
That is quite an honor. And for
people
our listeners,
tell me today still, mm-hmm. they say, you sound so much like, well, I wanted to be her when I was little.
Really? After
yes,
you knew who
I
she was when they called you her name?
Yes, I did. I wanted to be her. I just, oh, my goodness, this woman. I was like, oh, she doesn't want to sing anything but spirituals. Because my childhood, all I wanted was to know where was God.
Yes.
And for me, Mahalia Jackson singing those songs was just incredible.
Oh, no question about it. No question about it. Wow. So please connect the dots for us. You grew up in Patterson, and where was your next juncture on your life's path after you left Patterson? Where'd you go?
When I left Patterson, I went to New York.
Mm.
I moved to New York. I went to nursing school. I mean, in terms of state,
yes.
I moved to New York.
Yes.
And I worked as a nurse after I finished nursing school, and I got fired, ironically, from my first job at Sloan Kettering. And the severance pay that I got when I was fired, I took and bought my ticket to Germany, where my cousin had finished college and she was a commissioned officer. And so I said, well, I'm coming to Germany. And so when I got to Germany, her boyfriend was in the music business.
Uh-huh.
And so she had stopped. You know, she had left the service and she was modeling because she was just absolutely stunning, gorgeous. And so the first person that I saw when I made the car, I can still remember it now, driving into Germany in the taxi, a huge poster of my cousin.
Wow.
Gigantic.
Is that the cousin I met here in Zuri?
No, it's her sister.
It's her sister, okay.
Yeah, it's her sister. Because Karen Alexander is my my younger cousin, Susan's sister, who, as everybody knows, was a major top model.
Right, that's the one I met, yes. So go ahead. You
so
were about to say something.
Went to Germany to visit Susan. I wound up staying 3 months instead of 3 weeks.
Mm.
Excuse me. And so after being there for 3 weeks, we decided to go on a little tour, and I went to, Susan's boyfriend had gone to Yale, and he said, oh, I have a very good friend. You want to go to Paris, you got to go meet Laurent. So I went to Paris, met Laurent. He was wonderful. We became like best of buddies. He was like my little brother. And I hung out in Paris, and I just fell in love, had a great time, discovered all these expatriate black Americans,
yes.
Started singing in clubs in Paris. And the next thing you knew, I went back home, started working as a nurse in private duty, saved all my money, came back to Paris, and lived there, moved there for a year.
Amazing, amazing.
Because back in the day, $1,000 would last you forever. $2,000.
Well, that was a lot of money.
You,
mm-hmm.
you, yes, because you got the dollar was, you for $1, you got 10 francs.
Mm.
It was amazing.
So it
I
stretched
would buy,
even more further than it would have here, yes.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. It was unbelievable. So I would go there and, you know, I could travel, I could do this, I could do that. And I just had the most incredible experience living in France.
Wow.
Met tons of people from all over the world. Got my first experience meeting African people from all over the world.
Yeah.
Started reading France Fanon. Started finding out about different political activities that went on in France. And just amazing.
I can imagine. Now, when you left, you're ahead of me. I was going to get to Europe, but we're already there, so let's stay with it. Now, when you left there, did you then immediately go to Rome, or was that a whole other trip?
Well, actually, we did go to Rome.
Okay.
Excuse me. We did go to Rome, and on the train was a young African scholar who was working on his PhD, and he spotted us. And he said to my cousin and I and Michael, who was my cousin's boyfriend at the time, he said, you know, you're not going to get a pension in Italy. They're not going to let any black people. And so he said, you're welcome to stay at my house.
Mm.
So he let us. He was so nice to us. We stayed with him. We found out he was from Nigeria, and he was working on his PhD.
Wow.
Yes, I eventually became engaged to that young man.
You did?
And yes, I did.
I didn't know that story.
Yep, we did go our separate ways.
Uh-huh.
But he was just wonderful. We're still friends today.
Beautiful.
And he wound up getting his PhD, and he's been doing some great work in Nigeria. But I did go back to the United States, and I started singing, and then I was cast in the film Sankofa.
Right, right, right. Now, before we get into Sankofa, I wanted to take a moment to do a station break. So just hold on. And actually, I'm going to rewind because there are a couple other questions I wanted to ask you about some things we were talking about a little earlier. You're ahead of me. So hold on while we do our station identification break. For those of you who are listening, you are tuned in to Adila on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. And my guest today is the very talented Miss Imzuri Moyo. Okay. So, Imzuri, I had a couple of questions about your nursing days. Can we go back there?
Okay. You go back to the nursing?
Yeah, I had a couple of questions. I wanted to find out, how did you go from, because I'm still connecting the dots, how did you decide to go from being a vocalist to being a nurse?
Well, that kind of happened simultaneously. I didn't stop nursing to become a vocalist.
Okay.
I always was I was always working as a nurse, and
mm-hmm.
I was always singing
okay.
on the side.
Okay.
So it wasn't
like you were
like
doing the two.
Or.
Uh-huh.
I was always doing both.
I got you. Now, how was it for you being a nurse? And what ultimately, I guess you really kind of answered it when your situation happened where you got fired, you saved your money, you went to Germany. So that's really how you ended up, I suppose, leaving the nursing. But how was that time where you were serving
well, actually,
in that way?
Well, actually, no, because I always kept the nursing. I would always work as a nurse,
mm-hmm.
save my money, and do whatever I wanted to do, like take vocal lessons. That's
what
supported me for a long time.
I got you. Even after the Europe?
Yeah.
I got you.
Even after Europe.
I got you. And you've touched upon this a little bit. Now I'm back to Europe. What was it like for you being an African-American female entertainer in Europe? You're very beautiful. You're very dark. You're very statuesque. You stand out because of your presence. How was it for you being in Europe with those attributes?
Well, let me just say, I was so young, and I was always very political.
Yes.
So for me, beauty wasn't a part of something that I would say that I thought about.
Mm-hmm.
I was more into Malcolm X and thinking about politics and racism in America.
Yes.
And so my art and singing and doing well, not so much theater, but singing, being a singer, I was always focused on how I could change things.
Yes, yes, yes. And I want to come back to that.
That was my focus.
I want to come back to that. What made you return to the United States, and how long were you over there in Europe altogether?
A year in France, a year in Italy.
Okay.
Well, you know, you always come home. You know, Europe is not home.
Got it.
So after I had, filled my fill, I came home. It was an adjustment. I have to say it was an adjustment.
I can imagine after 2 years of being away.
It was a big adjustment. And
yeah.
When I came back, I was always trying to find a way to leave and go back. But, you know, you have to face the music.
Yes.
And so you have to get on with life. And life just happened. I started back nursing again. I started studying opera. I started studying acting. I got private acting coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And things just started evolving, and that's how I was cast in the film Sankofa.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. What were you going to ask?
I was just going to ask, what made you decide that you wanted to cross over and become an actor?
I always wanted to be an actor. I always
You did.
That. Oh, yeah. as a child, I knew it. I used to tell people I'm going to go sing in the nightclubs, be an actress at night, and in the daytime. No, that's the reverse. In the daytime, I'm going to be a nurse, and at night, I'm going to be a singer and actor.
Wow.
So that was a given.
Gotcha. And where did you train? You were about to talk about those who taught you.
HB Studio with Herbert Berghoff. I trained with Nelson, George, oh God, I'm getting his name confused now, because it's the flip. George, I can't think of
it. It's going to come back to you.
Actually, it's going to come back to me. He played in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, George Cukor.
No, actually, the man who played one of the attendants, the black attendant, and one who flew over the cuckoo's nest.
Oh, okay. It's coming back to me now. I'm starting to see the faces in that film. Okay.
Nathan George.
Okay, okay.
Nathan George is his name. And Nathan is, very, how I put it, to say the least, very radical in his approach to theater and the arts. And so I studied with Nathan, and I studied with different people, that Randy Frazier coached me. I did a little bit of B. Richard's play,
oh,
A Black
amazing.
Woman Speaks. Yes.
Amazing
from A
woman.
Black Woman Speaks.
Oh, I know the piece,
I got the nerve to write Fannie Lou.
Wow. What an inspiration that was. Now, how was it crossing over from being a vocalist, actually, to being an actor? What was that transition like for you?
It wasn't something that was an intellectual part of me that I thought about it. It's almost like just going from one key to a song to the next.
Ah.
You slide
because you
in
were still telling
note.
The story, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, back to Sankofa, how did you land the role in that cultural film?
Well, my role, Lucy, was already cast.
Mm.
And one of my, I think it was Nathan, told me, they're looking for an actress to do a role, so why don't you go down and audition?
Mm-hmm.
And it was already cast, and when I went down, and I think I did an excerpt from the Richard piece, they recast and put me in it.
Isn't that amazing? They recast and gave you the role.
They recast and gave me the role.
What an honor that was.
Yes,
I looked up the meaning of Sankofa. I was really curious to know what it meant. And what I found very interesting is that one of the definitions references the Sankofa bird of West Africa, and the image that they gave is of the Sankofa bird flying forward while looking backwards with an egg in its mouth, and that egg represents the future, the looking
Absolutely.
Back. And I thought, wow, what a powerful image that is. And then the other meaning I found translated means to go back and get it. So how do these definitions in your mind speak to the essence of the film Sankofa?
Well, the film is a little controversial in the sense of a scholar once told me, she said, in theory, looking back is to slavery is not our legacy. It's not all we've done.
That's correct.
And she did have an issue with it. But I would say that for a lot of people, just addressing the issue of slavery was a big step for them.
Yes.
Huge step. And so from that sense, going back to get just that, to heal some of that pain, because for me, I can speak from my experience, it was so healing because I had a place to put all of the hurt and anger that I had felt my whole life, and I healed from that.
Mm.
And then Fannie Lou took me to another level where I could start feeling love for myself and love for others and humanity.
Yes.
And, and to be able to see that everybody comes here, that cross that everybody,
mm-hmm.
that they speak about in Christianity, everybody comes here with something that they have to get past.
Yes. Yes.
So for me, I look back, I got that, you know, learned about how powerful African our ancestors were to come through that, and how we still have moved on. We're still coming through things, and we're still moving on. We're still evolving. But it's a place that you have to go. I feel African-American people have to go to that place and deal with what happened in slavery, because we've been cut off from that.
I totally agree. And once we do that, it explains a whole lot of things in terms of our dysfunctions, in terms of things that still haunt us, in terms of things that we really need to heal, as well as celebrate. And for me, in terms of the film, I don't think the film was saying that, you know, for those who found it controversial, that that's where we began. I think, in the way I saw it, was more that was somewhere along our continuum, because at the source, of course, we all know it really was Africa, and we really did come from majesty.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the scholar that said that was a friend of mine. She's in her 90s now, and she was such a, I mean, this woman has a PhD.
Uh-huh.
And she's in her 90s, so you know what she came through to get to where
yes,
she
Yes, I
is.
Can imagine.
Yeah, she was born in the 1919 or 1920.
Right, I can imagine. Now, one other thing I wanted to say about Sankofa, and then we'll move on, is in terms of the film, one of the things that struck me most and impacted me was just the beauty of the film. It was stunning. And the look of it. It was also poignant. It was brutal. It was poetic. It was all of those things. It was an art film. And I was curious to know, where did you guys shoot that? Was that off the coast of South Carolina?
It was in Jamaica.
Oh, you guys were in Jamaica, actually.
Yeah, part of it was in Jamaica, and then the other half was in Ghana.
Wow. So you got to go with the film to Jamaica and also to Ghana.
I didn't go to. I wasn't in the Ghanaian part.
Okay.
But I did get to go to Ghana, but not with Sankofa.
Got you. Wonderful. Well, let's fast forward now to your work as a solo artist. And for those what a solo artist is, it's someone who performs on stage by themselves. And in this case, we're talking about you doing a one-woman show. Someone's beeping in on my phone in case you guys are hearing a beep. And we're live. How did it come to pass that you began to do solo work? I think you sort of touched upon it a little bit when you talked about Bea Richards.
Yeah, I had auditioned for Broadway and hadn't gotten anything, you know, and I just was just so disheartened. And I probably, I believe, forgot about acting in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I never forgot about singing, but acting, eh. But when I saw Fanny Lou Hamer on Like It Is, Gil Noble, who just wanted to be with the ancestors, had her on there, and she had already made her transition, and I saw her, and it was phenomenal. And I said to her, I said, I'm going to write a show on her. I was just talking.
Mm.
And I said it for a deal. I said it for over 10 years.
Wow.
I'm writing a show on Fanny Lou Hamer.
But you know what? You had planted that seed. You had claimed it. You had visualized it.
I claimed it. Didn't have an ounce of experience in writing.
Wow.
Kept saying, I'm going to write that show on Fanny Lou Hamer. And finally, I, you know, was I had to face the fact, you know, you've been auditioning for years now, and you haven't gotten anything. So something said, you know, it wasn't even something said. A line came in my head, which was, let me see which line. I was hearing these poetic things. 4,000 years of cotton picking, and, you know, would come in my head. These poetic sentences would come in my head, and I heard them.
Yes, and like she said, being tired of being tired.
Yes. I heard them.
Mm-hmm.
I heard them. They were ringing, and I started writing them down. And finally, I worked on a job for a friend. She said, would you cover for me? And I went, and she said, you're going to meet my friend Steve Hollis. And Steve, she said, Steve will help you. Because I was there selling furniture for children's furniture, something like some side job, because I had quit nursing by then.
Mm-hmm.
And so Steve said, he said, what do you do? I said, I'm a singer, and I'm going to write a one-woman show on Fannie Lou Hamer. And I said, but I don't have a computer. He said, you do now.
Wow. No excuses. It was time.
And he bought my first big clunky computer.
Oh.
It sat in the corner for 6 months. I didn't go near it.
Goodness gracious.
Finally, I sat there. I went to the Schomburg. I started doing my research, and I wrote the show and won the Abelco Award.
I saw that in my research. How impressive is that?
It was shocking. I'm like, what? Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Now, for those listening,
I don't even know how I put the songs into it.
Well, you were being guided. You know that.
Well, listen, let me back up. That's not true. Because I used to go to this place called the Coffee House.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Jones, who was in SNCC,
mm-hmm.
and knew Fannie Lou Hamer personally and had talked with her.
Mm-hmm.
I was just bothering Matt all the time. Matt, could you tell me more about Fannie Lou Hamer? And he would tell me things. And then he said, her song is This Little Light of Mine. And he said, she loved Go Tell It on the Mountain. I said, well, I can't. So one day I said, well, I got to put Go Tell It on the Mountain but I can't write that. It's a Christmas song. So I said, go tell it on the mountain that voter's registration is here.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Wow. And, of course, speaking of This Little Light of Mine, we opened the show with you singing. That was actually you singing This Little Light of Mine when we opened the show today. Beautiful
yes.
voice. I love your voice. Now, for those listeners, you're welcome. For those listeners who may never have heard of Miss Fannie Lou Hamer, who may be younger, can you just say a word about her? So let's take a moment to educate each one, teach one.
Fannie Lou Hamer was the 20th child born in 1917 in Sunflower County. I believe, I don't think she was born in Sunflower County, but she was raised in Mississippi, Sunflower
yeah.
County, home of Senator Stennis and Eastman, who were congressmen who would go and enact these laws to keep people from being able to vote. And they had hundreds of acres of land, and people would sharecroppers down there. And Fannie Lou Hamer was working on the W.B. Marlowe plantation, and she was the timekeeper. And when SNCC came through and James Bevel introduced her into SNCC, and these people found out about voting, that they could vote, Fannie Lou Hamer was on board.
Yes, yes.
Well, to make a long story short, and she just was so powerful. 4'11". Polio, limp in the left leg, challenged him, ran for Congress, started telling people about voting, and she was stopped several times, and one time she was stopped with 9 other people, and they were brutally beaten. She, in particular,
yes.
was beaten unconscious, and they blinded her in her left eye. And she got to tell the story at the 1964 Democratic Convention.
Yes. And from that time on, Lyndon Johnson said, as I understand it, from now on there will always be blacks who will be at the Democratic Convention.
Well, I know one thing he said, which is very interesting, is he tried to stop the, because, her testimony was broadcast worldwide, if you
mm-hmm,
try to stop
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm.
But let me tell you, it was God in plan. There was no way he could stop it. And when Fannie Lou Hamer went around the world, it was riveting.
Yes.
They were in Vietnam, and they were oppressing people, stopping Americans from trying to vote. What? And Lyndon Baines Johnson tried to stop that transmission from happening, but he couldn't do it.
No, and ultimately he had to give it up. He had to give it up. And before we go to station break in a second, I just want to ask you, now, of course, it's another presidential year and one that's going to be very, very, very hotly and very closely looked at and already is for many reasons. How do how do you feel, or why do you feel your show portraying it now is particularly election year?
Well, because there's so much voter suppression going on, the same things that went on when Fannie Lou Hamer was trying to vote down in Mississippi in the 60s and 50s. So it's almost like a repeat of history.
Yes.
And I'm reading Harry Belafonte's book, My Song, and of course everybody knows about Mr. Belafonte, who basically funded the movement, him and Mahalia Jackson. So many other people gave, too. Don't get me wrong. A lot of people, white people gave, too. Everybody supported the movement. But Mr. Belafonte was unbelievable. And he supported Fannie Lou Hamer. His wife, Julie, told me personally she did her hair. And, you know, I believe that not just Fannie Lou Hamer, but so many of the young SNCC workers who took beatings and, you know, just for this right to vote, we can't forget that. First
no,
of all, young people have to find out about what happened. Then you can't forget. It doesn't make sense. We can't say you can't forget because in the first place, they don't even know to forget.
Right. For example, a lot of young people don't know about Freedom Summer in 1964, when all those college students from the North and even from around the South and colleges came to really work toward getting the vote, particularly in states like Mississippi. And they understood that if they could crack that nut in Mississippi, the other states would have to follow. So
let me tell you, Alabama was pretty bad, honey.
Yeah. Mississippi, they're right there neck and neck, I think.
Yeah, Bull Connor, oh, my God.
I know.
And there was another mayor that would beat those children. It was just something else.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So we all need to know lest we forget and repeat history again. So let's take a station identification break. For those of you who are tuning in and wondering what in the world are we talking about and who is this, you are listening to Adila and my guest today. This is on Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, and my guest today is the very gifted Miss Imzuri Moyo. Now, moving on, as we talk about the Fannie Lou Hamer story, I want to bring us up to date to right here, right now, this month. This month, the end of June, you're going to be participating in the 3rd annual D.C. Black Theater Festival. And the series that you're going to be a part of is called Living Legacies at the Arena Stage, June 28th through July 1st. You want to say a word about that? I know there are four other performers who are portraying historical figures.
Yes, there's a gentleman coming from England portraying Paul Robeson. Can't wait to see him. A brother portraying Langston Hughes. Leslie McCurdy is portraying Harriet Tubman. And a sister from Philly, reach her name at the moment, is portraying Sojourner Truth. And we're going to be at Arena Stage, and it's going to be exciting. And there's going to be 120 shows going on for the festival. So if anybody's in the earshot of Washington, D.C., please get your tickets and support us because we really want to continue this, going back to Arena and having a forum for young black people and people of color to be able to stage their work.
Yes.
So it's just amazing what's
going on.
Very
exciting how we're having black theater festivals just popping up all over. And, of course, the oldest is the National Black Theater Festival in Winston-Salem, but it's just a delight to see other cities are doing the same. Now, you have two other historical solo shows, A Sojourn with Truth and Mother Africa, Miriam Makeba. That makes three powerful African women that you are portraying from different places around the world. How did these other two shows come to pass, and you want to say a word about who those women are?
Yes, well, Sojourner Truth was born in New York State into slavery. A lot of people didn't know about that in 1794,
right.
We believe.
That's right.
And she spoke Dutch.
Yeah.
Her mother tongue was Dutch. And she was a powerful woman who spoke out, who was an abolitionist, in fact, and who lost her son Peter and got her son back out of slavery. Just an amazing woman. And she lived to be in her 80s.
Yes.
And when they put the bust in D.C. of her, Dr. Ife Williams, who was in the National Congress of Black Women, asked me to do something, and I wrote this specifically for that installation.
Yes, and I was there in the audience. I saw you. And what was so powerful at that installation, the First Lady was there as well, and there were at least three of us who portrayed Sojourner Truth who were in the house, and I'm sure there were more that we didn't
beautiful.
Even know about. Yeah. I get chills now thinking about that. It was such a powerful experience. And when they lifted up that veil and showed us that bust of Sojourner Truth, wow. You could hear the gasps in the room. It was just powerful, absolutely powerful. Now, in terms of your voice, for those who are wondering, well, what does she sing? You're a soprano, and we already mentioned that you're
actually,
classically
I'm a dramatic
sang.
Soprano. Actually, I'm a dramatic soprano.
Tell us the difference.
Well, I can go low. I can go much lower, and it's the color. You know, it's I'm more like I'm not pine, I'm mahogany.
Right.
And I have a lower range.
Got it. You
so
sure do. You sure do. I hadn't heard that term before. Thank you. And I want to plug your CD that came out that was released in case people want to get a copy of it and really immerse themselves in your wonderful voice. Can you tell us what that CD is and how people would get a copy?
Yes, it's called The Fannie Lou Hamer Project. That's from the show The Fannie Lou Hamer Story. And, of course, I'll Be Home for Christmas, which I just released a couple years ago, which I dedicated to the troops in hope that they would indeed be coming home to their families.
Yeah.
So a lot of the songs, I asked my family and friends, what's your favorite song? And they gave me their favorite song. And hopefully this CD will reverberate into the world, bring home the troops. I'll Be Home for Christmas.
Let us claim that.
And, my mom's brother said that to her mom because he was in World War II and he didn't make it back home.
Wow.
So that's my mom picked that one, and that when I hear it, she used to cry when she would hear me play when I would play it for her.
Yes. Well, let's hope that many of our troops are here by Christmas. And, of course, they're coming back now, so it's already begun, which is a blessing. I know that you were quoted in the New York Daily News as saying, quote, I want to change the world through singing. And you were alluding to that, and you mentioned that earlier. I wanted to come back to that. How do you feel you're beginning to do that, to change the world, your contributions of changing the world through singing? And just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I am so blessed because I get to do what I really love to do.
Yes.
Which is sing and do and act, and not just be an actor, but an activist like yourself.
Yes.
And it's helped me to get through a lot of what we come to this world to get through, whatever it is. It could be our anger. It could be our not feeling we're not loving ourselves enough. But I believe that having done Fannie Lou Hamer's story helped me to get to a place of love. And singing has taken me to that point. Being able to sing and to bring that joy and that healing to people, for me, is more than I guess I can even bite off or begin to chew. It's like, oh, my God, you mean you blessed me to be able to do this?
Yes.
And I think quite often now that I'm reading Harry Belafonte's book, such a great activist, such a great entertainer that he was able to combine the two. And so that's my goal, to get even further out there so more people can hear it. And the more you can bring love to the table, the more love can heal the world. Because that's what we're really here to do. We're here to love one another and to heal one another.
Yeah.
And I feel that in every part of my being.
I totally hear you. And Mr. Harry Belafonte is certainly a good example of that, of one who's been able to merge the two together in terms of being a vocalist and being an activist, and has never backed down from that, and truly is a role model for many of us who do what we do. And I just feel really blessed that all three of your solo shows you've performed with our Los Angeles Women's Theater Festival, the excerpts from the Fannie Lou Hamer story, Sojourn with Truth, Mother Africa, Miriam Makeba, and I just want to ask you, what keeps you coming back to us? We love having you. What keeps you coming back to the Los Angeles Women's Theater Festival?
Adil, I tell you, what you do with that festival, giving people a forum to really put their work out there and to heal. I mean, I've gotten so much. I've gotten such a deep healing from watching those other performers, those other women tell their stories. And it's given me hope to say, you know, when you go to your bank account and you don't have as much as you would like, I said, well, at least I'm doing what I love.
That's right.
And, you know, and the festival actually, you know, I mean, the last show that I wrote because of you and the festival was the Miriam McCabe piece because you needed a replacement. And I just happened to see her speaking out against rape in the Congo.
Yes.
And, you know, of course you have to do it delicately because we don't want to finger anybody in particular. But we still don't want to see injustice go on to anybody, even if it's black people perpetrating it. So I'm just so happy that I got a chance to do that piece for, you know, your audience, and I really feel like they understood what I was trying to say, and they felt it, and they really liked what I was saying.
Oh, they totally
got
it.
The voice of Miriam Makeba, you know, using her voice, because what a great woman.
Well, they totally got what you were doing, and I just feel honored that you wrote it to perform with our Los Angeles Women's Theater Festival. And it fit our theme for that evening so well, because the theme was Across the Map. And I was like, who's going to fill in for this actor who's not going to be able to be here? Because she had a piece, you know, that she had done that dealt with the Middle East, and I was like, where are we going to go now with the last person we need? And then I thought of you, and we had that conversation. So thank you for giving birth to that piece with the festival, and I certainly hope that it will continue to grow and that you'll expand it and that it will become even far greater than what it already is. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
And for our listeners who are wondering, well, what is this Los Angeles Women's Theater Festival they're talking about? We're right now taking submissions for our 20th anniversary. I am so thrilled as one of the founders of our nonprofit arts organization here in Los Angeles. And for our 20th, we're going to flip the script a little bit. We'll have females. We're going to have males. We're going to have female youth performing. So if any of you are out there listening and you are a solo artist, be it an actor, dancer, storyteller, performance artist, performance poet, musician, singer, stand-up, please submit. You can go to www.LAWTF, is in Los Angeles Women's Theater Festival. I just had to shamelessly plug our Los Angeles Women's Theater Festival.
What a blessing.
And, I also want to take a moment. We've talked now about your personal life a little bit. We've talked about your career. And because I know that you are holistic on many levels in terms of how you move forward with your life, I really want to talk a little bit about diet because I know that, like me, you're a vegan. And that, of course, being one who does not eat anything from an animal. How has diet and natural healing contributed to your sense of well-being?
Well, I've had to find my road because this latest thing, as you know, is that I found I'm allergic to wheat. And a lot of the foods that I had been taking in was, you know, was wheat-based. A lot of the meats that we eat was wheat-based. And I was falling out, going to sleep after I ate every single night, no energy, and I found myself not eating as much green as I should have been eating.
Uh-huh.
So I recently removed wheat, mostly wheat, all of it from my diet, and I'm now doing a lot more green. I'm juicing a lot more, and I feel 20 years younger.
Wow.
I feel so much better, and I've also had to let go of tofu. Because tofu I was having a problem with my thyroid, and that can slow down the function of the thyroid. So
wow.
I've really cut back on my tofu tremendously. I don't buy it anymore. So now I've had to find a way to get in protein. So I just bought some hemp today. And I also make meatballs out of nuts and lentils.
Wow.
That's fabulous. And I do, for protein, have had to kind of do, because I cut the wheat out, I do a cheese that has, it's called raw milk cheese, and it has probiotics in it,
okay.
And they don't pasteurize it.
Okay.
So, but that's probably it on the dairy. I don't do eggs or anything like that. So it's been a road that I've had to really find my way on, you know, on what's really good for me, you know, on the, in the long run, because what you could eat, what I could eat 10 years ago, I can't eat today.
Right.
So I'm feeling so much better, and I don't believe that you can really attract wealth without health. When you're healthy and you're feeling good, you attract a great agent, you attract people who want to come out and see your show, and when they come out to see your show, they say, oh, wow, you know, maybe we want you to come here, go to Alaska and do your show, which I did. I went to Alaska and took Fannie Lou Hamer up to Alaska, which was amazing. So, and now that I'm feeling healthier now, I'm expecting great things to happen.
Oh,
you know,
greater.
So,
they're already great. They're going to be greater. There
you
have it.
Thank you, Adila.
Oh, and
thank
it's true.
You.
There is no question about it. What you're about to do in D.C. with the Black Theater Festival is awesome, and so many people are going to be coming to see the work that you're all doing and living legacies. And certainly I'm hoping that our First Lady may even be able to come out and support.
What
so
a
we will
blessing.
Claim that. Yes, we'll claim that. Now,
well, I'm going to plug up one of your Los Angeles Women Theater Festival participants, and that's Christy Farris. She's going to be... yeah, Christy's going to be there. She's a
Christy's
smart young woman. I really admire her.
Wow. She
In
has
Search
a piece...
Of Oak.
Yeah, she has a piece called In Search of O that relates to orgasms. It's really funny, and yet it's also very poignant. And speaking of other Los Angeles Women's Theater Festival alum, of course, Leslie McCurdy, who's on your bill, Living Legends, Legacies, she actually performed with the festival her Harriet Tubman piece as well. So I feel really honored that our performers are being seen not only nationally but internationally, and oftentimes mention us in their bios. So what a time that's going to be for all of you. Now, I'd like to take a moment to kind of shift gears because I know there may be listeners out there who are interested in becoming a professional vocalist or actor, and they're probably thinking, how do I do it? How can I do what she's done? How can I really step out there and make my dreams come true? What advice would you give to those listening who are interested in becoming professional vocalists and actors?
I would say first find your voice, whether, you know, what you really love, because that's where everything emanates from.
Yes.
Find what you love, whether you love gospel, whether you love classical, whether you love jazz, and find whatever it is that you love, and then you start to study the people that have done it.
Yes.
And, you know, use them as your role model. I used to listen to Leontine Price over and over, Maria Callas over and over, Sarah Vaughan over and over and over and over, you know, and I would try to imitate them and sing like them.
Mm.
And I would try to sing like Mahalia Jackson. And through doing that, I found me.
Found your own voice, yes.
Yes. And then, you know, for me, it was hard to pinpoint what I really love. I'm still searching. I don't think you ever have to, you know, say, well, I just do this, I just do that. Record companies do that to you.
Right,
they
pigeonhole
you because they need a way for you to sell in this area of the store so people won't look. And I don't know how Harry Belafonte did it. He did some phenomenal things that I don't find many singers are able to do. He sang with everybody.
Amazing.
You know?
Just amazing. So, just amazing.
So you find your voice, you study people that you love, then you find your voice, and then you go for it.
Yes.
Just do the music that you really love, and then write your own.
Mm.
Write your own.
And the biggest thing I think you're saying is go train, study, go for it. Do it.
Absolutely.
And my last question for you today is, how do you feel your politics and your sense of social responsibility, and we see that in the 3 one-woman shows that you perform, how have they contributed to the choices you've made in your life professionally, your sense of politics and social responsibility?
Well, probably to my detriment.
Why do you say that? I'm sorry.
Probably to my detriment. It's contributed in that way. But, you know, I don't see a separation. I just don't see how you can separate your politics from what you do.
There you go.
There's a certain role that I'm just not interested in having to do. For me, it's not. I don't know. You know, my girlfriend said something to me so powerful one day. And it was so simple. She said, you know what, Missouri? We just don't love money that much.
There you go. I've certainly turned down roles, too. I mean, there's some things. I guess at the end of the day, we have to be able to live with ourselves and sleep at night. And that has to do with having a conscience and having a sense of integrity. And I certainly feel you have that. I know you have that.
Well,
and
let me tell
something.
You, Adila, I was going to say, when I go to bed at night, I don't even dilly-dally for the sleep part. When my head hits the pillow, I'm out like a light.
Right.
You know, so I don't have any guilt. I mean, yeah, probably I would be in a better position. You know, and who knows? Maybe God's going to, you know, I won't say maybe. God will open up bigger doors for me.
And he has opened many already. Yes, and you have
absolutely
a calling. You have a calling,
yeah,
and you've been obedient, and so more good is coming. And believe it or not, our interview time is almost over. Guests usually go, an hour has already passed, or really?
Wow.
It goes so fast. And before we close, though, I want to ask if there's anything else you'd like to say.
Well, I'd just like to say thank you. I know this show is, you know, for a lot of people who've got tons and tons of credits, and I just want to thank you for opening up the door. As a matter of fact, allowing me to come on your show is I'm reassured that I'm going to be in the stars.
Oh, you already are.
My star has got to really get big now because I've been on a deal with show.
That's a high compliment.
With Nicholas and all these great actors and activists. So, I really enjoyed her. So,
in terms of talent,
of course,
you're right there with the rest of them. There's no question about that.
And Florence LaRue, who is just such an angel.
Yes,
you know,
she is.
So I'm just so excited to be on a show that they were on.
Yay!
You know?
And more is coming. So you're very welcome. And, Zori, I'm so glad to have you as a friend. And thank you so much for joining me today. So we're going to close out, and I'm going to speak now to my listeners. And we're going to actually end with another song where you're singing, so they'll get to hear your voice again now that they know that's you. They may not have known at the top with this little light of mine, but now they'll be listening, I think, a little bit more intently. So to my listeners, again, you're listening to Adila on Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. I'd like to hear from you and find out what you thought about today's show. You can reach me at my website, www.adilabarnes.com. AdilaBarnes.com, that's AdilaBarnes.com. Also, let's help keep Blake Radio on the air by becoming a subscriber today. And remember to dance, dance, dance like nobody's watching. Enjoy your miracle today. Our music's coming, I know it is.
Okay, I heard it higher in the octave. Okay.
Summertime. And the living is easy. Fish are jumping. And the cotton is. Oh, so hush, little baby. decks.